Okay, so I'm recording. Okay, I always say that the Daf Yomi is Min HaShemayim because more often than not, the psukim that come up in the sugyas are relevant to that week's parsha, and so on. So we've been following the Daf, and we've been trying to take topics from Yevamos and delve into them. So I thought that especially upcoming Shavuos, we can speak about the sugya of Rus. So the Gemara talks about the sugya of Rus, and we actually learn a lot of the halachas of Geirus from the psukim and from the midrashim surrounding Rus's Geirus. And I thought it would be interesting to jump into this topic, and it's not so clear at all how this Geirus exactly worked. So I started off the shir in item one. So I posed a question. So Yesh Mavuka Gedoyla, there's a tremendous question and confusion, I should say, between the Mefarshim, if Rus HaMoabiyah, if Rus the Moabite, the wife of Mahlon, was she actually converted? Was she Jewish at the time that she originally married Mahlon, or did she become Jewish later? Right? So obviously we would expect that Mahlon, the tzaddik, would have converted Rus before he married her back in Sde Moab. That's what we would have expected. But we see that there's a tremendous mavuka, there's a tremendous discussion and various opinions in the Mefarshim about exactly the nature of Rus's Geirus. So let's look at some of the psukim together. So I actually wrote down the psukim that the Gemara speaks about. So this is at the very beginning of Rus, Perek Aleph, starting from Pasuk Gimel. So the Pasuk describes how Elimelech passed away in the Sde Moab. So we know the story that Elimelech went with his family, his wife and his two sons, and there was a famine, and he left Eretz Yisrael. So he basically abdicated his position as the Gabal Hadar in Eretz Yisrael, and he escaped. He ran to the Sde Moab. He ran to the country, to the fields of Moab, and he really was escaping the pressure of the famine in Eretz Yisrael, but also escaping to a certain extent the responsibility that the shofet, that the Gabal had in Eretz Yisrael. It's an amazing story. So he went and he took his family and he settled in the Sde Moab. Then the pasuk says that Elimelech passed away. Ish Noami, he was the husband of Noami. But he shoyer he ushnei bonel, and Noami was left in a foreign land with her two sons. So the pasuk goes on to say, "Vayisu lahem noshim moavios." The pasuk says that the two sons, Mahlon and Kilion, married two Moabite women. It's interesting that the pasuk would refer to them as Moabite women, especially that Ammon and Moab. We know that the women, although a Moabite man, even if he converts, would be forbidden to marry into the Kahal, into the congregation, but a Moabite woman is immediately permitted to marry into the Kahal. It comes up soon in Yevamos. So if these Nashim converted, they would immediately be full-fledged Gerim. Why would we refer to them as Noshim Moabiyot? So it's curious that the Pasuk would refer to them as Moabite women. So the Pasuk says that Mahlon and Kilion, the two sons, married Noshim Moabiyot, women, Moabite women. Shemu achas Orpah, Shem Hashem is Rus. Vayeshvu shom ke'eser shanim, and they lived there in Sde Moab for approximately 10 years, the Pasuk says. The Pasuk goes on to say, Vayamusu gam shnehem, but then the two sons as well, they also passed away, Mahlon v'Kilion. So the woman, Noami, was left bereft from her husband and from her two sons. So this is a tragedy. So I skipped the Pasuk Ches. So after her two sons passed away, so she's with her two daughters-in-law. So Naomi says to her two daughters-in-law, Lechna Shoiva Isha LeBeis Ima. Why don't you return, each of you, the woman, to her mother's household? She's basically convincing them, attempting to convince them to go back. Yas Hashem Imachem Chesed, Hashem should deal kindly with you, Ka'asher Asisim Im HaMesim V'Imadi, just as you dealt so kindly with those that passed away, referring to her sons, to their husbands, and to me. You were so good to me all the years. So now I'm asking you, why suffer along with me? Why don't you return home to your Moabite homes and stay here? I'm going to go back. So, Yitin Hashem Lochem, Hashem should give you, the Pasuk continues. Umetzena Menucha, you should find peace, security, Isha Beis Isha, each of you, a woman with her husband, why don't you remarry, stay here and remarry? Atishak Lohen, so Noami gave them each a kiss. And they lifted their voices and they were crying. It must have been a powerful, a very emotional moment. So they say to her, no, we'll return with you to your nation, to your people. But Naomi insists, she persists against her daughters-in-law, and she says to both of them, say, return, my daughters. Lama telachne imi. Why should you follow me? Why should you go back with me? Ha'oidli banim b'me'ai? Do I have sons in my womb? As if you no longer have any use for me. I'm useless for you because you were married to my two sons. But now that my two sons passed away, what good am I to you? What good is it for you to follow me along and to go back to Eretz Yisrael? Do I have sons in my womb that could become husbands to you? So the pasuk continues in this vein. So again, she's pressuring her daughters-in-law. Return. I'm too old to remarry. It's very interesting. So Naomi keeps on saying, even if I would have hope to remarry, even if I would marry right this minute and tonight, I would be married. I already would be with my husband. And even if I would give birth to two more sons, would you plan on waiting for them? You're going to wait for them to grow up and you'll have new husbands? Are you going to hold yourself back for them? Not to remarry someone else? Don't, my daughters. I'm so bitter that on account of you, I'm so bitter. Ki yatzah biyad Hashem, the hand of Hashem was against me. I lost my husband. I lost my sons. I'm just an old widow. I no longer serve any purpose for you. I don't have more sons to offer you. Even if I would get married right this minute and I would have sons, which is unlikely anyway, you wouldn't wait for them. So what good is it for you to follow me? And again, Batisena Koilan, so they lifted their voices, Batifkena Od, and they cried again. Batishak Orpa Lachamosa, and Orpa indeed, she was convinced. She kissed her mother-in-law, and she left. Barus Dovkaba, but Rus cleaved, attached herself to Noami, and refused to leave, and she just followed Noami back to Eretz Yisrael. Batoimer, so Naomi again, Hine Shava Yevimtech, your sister-in-law left El Amo V'El Eloheha, to her nation and back to her God. Shuvi Achara Yevimtech, follow your sister-in-law. Atoimer Rus, so Rus says, Al Tifki Bi, don't pressure me, La'ozvech, to leave you, Loshuv Miacharoyach, to go turn away from you. Ki Elasher Telchi Eilech, and these are the powerful psukim that we're going to see what the Gemara has to say. Ki Elasher Telchi Eilech, wherever you go, I will go. Uba asher tolini olin. Wherever you sleep, wherever you spend the night, that's where I will spend the night. Ameich ami. Your nation is my nation. Velokayach elokoi. And your God is my God. Kasher tomusi omos. Just as you die, that's how I agree to die. Neshame kover, and that's where I want to be buried. Koyase Hashem li. So too shall Hashem do to me, because Yosef, Ki amovis yafrid beini ubeinoya ubeinech. Hashem can do whatever he wants to me, but I refuse to leave. Only death, in death will we part, right? Only death will divide us. I want to follow you. But teira kimis ametis hilo lechas ito. So finally, Noemi got the hint. She saw, she got the message that Rus is persisting, is determined to follow Noemi. And she stopped trying to convince her to go away. The psukim go on to say that they both continued traveling until they arrived back in Beis Lochem, in Bethlehem. And when they got to Beis Lochem, all the people were amazed. Is this Noemi? What happened to her greatness? She used to be prosperous. What happened? She's left with nothing. And they couldn't believe what they saw. But we know the story, and we know the Mesiras Nefesh that Noemi and Rus demonstrated going back to Eretz Israel among all this humiliation. Just on the side, if it must have been a tremendous sight. You see, imagine if you would see three women speaking passionately on the street corner somewhere, and you have no idea what the topic is. And one woman is crying, the other woman is frantically waving her hands, another woman gives her a kiss and leaves, and these two women walk off. You have no idea what they're discussing, and how such a commonplace sight could really be such like a powerful, powerful moment in history. It can have such consequences. This was almost like a Jewish atomic nuclear bomb, that such spiritual energy, which is exploding and spilling over into the world. And we know that Rus, she was the model Geyoris. She ended up marrying Boaz. The rest is history. She was the matriarch of the Malchus Beis David, the Davidic dynasty, and she was and who is the forerunner of the Mashiach, that he should come from here of Yemenu. So it's just such a powerful story here, and the psukim here are just blow you away every time you read the psukim, the power and the emotion that must have been felt, that must have been present at that time. So if we analyze these psukim, it's very hard to understand, actually, because how could Noemi, and this is what I wrote here in item Gimel, how could Noemi try to persuade Arpah and Rus from going with her and going back to Eretz Yisrael? And she's actually trying to convince them to go back to their mother's house and to remarry who? To remarry non-Jewish men, Moabite men, and to return to their God. How could it be that Noemi is trying to pressure them to leave? If they're Jewish, so then that would be an act, that would actually be an act of mesis umediyah, but to convince somebody to leave Yiddishkeit and to stay because there's, you have no use with me, and Hashem's hand was cast against us, so why don't you leave? There's no such thing. How could it be that Noemi is trying to convince Rus and Arpah, and she was successful with Arpah? How could it be that Noemi, the tzedekis, would be pressuring them to leave? So the simple impression that you get from the psukim is taka, that they were not gerim yet, that they were not Jewish. They were not yet Jewish. And why do you want to now become Jewish of all times? Now you're going to be down in the dumps. Why don't you just go back and return to the Stei Moav? It actually would seem like that from the Gemara in Yevamos, as I mentioned earlier, because we learn all the Inyone Geiris from the Shakla Vatarya, the discussion, the back and forth between Noemi with Rus. So these psukim are also very powerful. These are the psukim that we just read. The Gemara in Yevamos, Mem Zayin Umed Beis, elaborates and gives us what the meaning of what these psukim were. What was Noemi trying to say to Rus, and what was Rus responding back to Noemi? So Noemi is actually giving Rus a rundown of various mitzvos that might be not so convenient. Maybe you don't want to take this on. So Amrullah, so Noemi says to Rus, Asir lan tum Shabbos. We have to observe Shabbos every week. When it's Shabbos, you have to stay put. You can't travel. You can't go out of the tum. You can't leave the city. What do you want this for? Answers Rus, Asher telchi eilech. I will go wherever you go. I'm prepared to accept Shabbos. I'm prepared to take all of the seeming, so to speak, restrictions of Shabbos, because I understand the value of Shabbos. It's not restrictions. It's halachas that help us focus and be elevated by the Shabbos. Wherever you go, I want to go. I'm willing to accept upon myself the restrictions that come along with the Shabbos day. Noemi says to Rus, Asr lo nichud, but we're not allowed to seclude ourselves with a man. We have to observe, we have a higher standard of morality. Being Jewish, we have to keep ourselves pure. Kedoshim tiyu, we have to keep ourselves pure. We can't just seclude ourselves with whoever we want. So to that, Rus responds, Ba'asher talini olin, I will stay wherever you stay. If it means we have to book two hotel rooms, we'll book two hotel rooms. Wherever you sleep, that's where I'll sleep. I'm prepared to keep the laws, the halachas of Yichud. I'm prepared to aspire to this higher level of morality. I'm prepared to not emulate the nations and to that our standard as Yidden is much higher than the standard of the rest of the world, or at least it should be. We should strive towards that. Noemi says, "Mefakdinon sheish meyos yud gimel mitzvahs." We have 613 mitzvahs that we have to do. What do you want this one? Says Rus, "Ameich ami, your nation is my nation. I'm prepared to accept upon myself all of the mitzvahs." Also, lo navodes kachavim. We're not allowed to worship idols. We have to believe in the one Hashem. So that's what Rus meant when she said, "Elokecha elokai," that your God is my God. I'm prepared to worship. To accept upon myself the Ol Malchus Shemayim of the true Hashem. I don't want to worship idols. I want to be an Eved Hashem. So then Noemi says, Arba Mises Nimsuru LeBezdin. But there are four capital punishments. Bezdin, we can sometimes lose our lives over the mitzvahs. Again, Rus responds emphatically, Asher Tomusi Amos, wherever you die, however you die, that's how I want to die. I'm prepared to accept upon myself all of the responsibilities, the high responsibility, the tremendous responsibilities, and almost the risks of becoming an Eved Hashem. Shetemusi Amos. Beis Kfarim Nimsiru LeBezdin. But Bezdin has two different cemeteries. We actually had this not too long ago in Yevamos, that there's a Bezdin, there's cemeteries for Rishoyim Gemurim. Tzadikim are buried in one cemetery, Rishoyim are buried in another cemetery, even within the Rishoyim cemeteries, there are two different cemeteries, depending on how wicked we are, we'll be buried in a more wicked cemetery. You know, imagine you go to the cemetery. This is the Rishoyim cemetery, and maybe there's like an arrow going down, and here's the righteous cemetery. There's an arrow going up, so you're going to be buried. You run the risk of being buried in a cemetery for the wicked. It's almost like the Gemara is saying, like people are going to be judged. They're even going to judge us if we're very wicked or only mildly wicked. What do you need this for? So again, Rus responds, Shame Kaver, I will be buried wherever you will be buried. I want to be like you. I want to have all of these responsibilities, these far, far reaching consequences I'm willing to accept upon myself because I want to be a Yid, I want to be Jewish. Miyad v'teira ki misametzes hi. So the pasuk continues that Noemi sees that Rus is serious about this, and the pasuk says that she stopped trying to persuade Rus to give it up. So this is how we learn the whole idea that you have to inform a potential candidate of the chamuras, the kalas and the chamuras, the punishments. You have to challenge them. There's some pushback. Are you sure that you want to take this on? And the Gemara says there that if the candidate Taka gives it up, so be it, because having an insincere ger among us is not necessarily a good thing. So we learn from these psukim the whole procedure, the process of bringing someone into the fold. So we see from all of this that it was only after the husbands passed away and Noemi was heading back to Eretz Yisrael, that's when the Geirus process began, and Noemi, so to speak, was handling the Geirus process of Rus and Noemi, of Rus and Orpa. And Orpa Taka gave it up, and Rus became a Yid. So it would seem from here that after Mises Baila, after her husband's passed away, that's when they converted, which obviously it begs the question, how were Mahlon and Kilion allowed to marry Moabite women if they weren't even Jewish? I'm not sure if we're going to be able to answer that question according to these shitos. The Targum on Megillas Rus, if you look at the Makrois Gedolos, the Targum right there on the spot says this explicitly, The pasuk says Vayisu, the targum is explaining the psukim into Aramaic. So it says the targum here interjects into the psukim. I bolded what the targum adds. Vayisu, this is pasuk, this is in the targum. So pasuk dalid, when it says that Machlon and Kilion married Noshim Moyavios, so it says the targum adds the Ovru al Xeris Memra da Hashem. It says that Machlon and Kilion indeed were in violation of the Gzeira of Hashem, of the mitzvah of Hashem. V'notlu lohay noshim nuchroyim, and they intermarried. They took non-Jewish women. The Targum says it explicitly. Min benos Moab, from the daughters of Moab. That's how the Targum is translating the pasuk when it says they married noshim Moavios. So the Targum is picking up on the word noshim Moavios. The pasuk would not refer to them as Moabite women, if they converted. Once they converted, they're fully Jewish. They're no longer in any way associated with Moab. It's not like a man who converts from Moab that he can't marry into the Kal. These women were perfectly permitted to marry anyone into the Kal if they would have converted. They wouldn't have been referred to as Nosha Moabios. So the Targum actually says that they violated the Xeris Memrish Hashem by marrying Noshim Nuchroyim, Min Benos Moab, from the daughters of Moab. Shum Chada Arpa, one of their names was Arpa, Shum Tinyan Tinyesa Rus, the second woman's name was Rus, that was Rus, Bas Egloin Malka de Moab, she was the daughter, not literally the daughter, but the grand a descendant of Egloin, the king of Moab, she had royalty in her blood. Bisivun Tamon Kizman Eshishnin, and the Targum translates they were there for about 10 years. And then again, the next pasuk hey, so the Targum translates be al da avru. I actually didn't bring this pasuk before, but the pasuk says that they passed away. So the Targum explains why Machloin and Kilyon passed away. What were they guilty of? Elimelech perhaps was guilty of leaving Eretz Yisrael and abdicating from his role, his responsibility, shirking his responsibility. But why did Machlon and Kilion pass away? Al da avru al gzeiris memer dasha. They passed away for this aveira of marrying noshim nuchroin. Ve'ischatu ba'amim min nuchroin. They intermarried. They married into the Goyish nation. Ischato yomehoin. Their days were cut off. Umesun after vehoin, and they both died. Machlon mikirion. Both Machlon and Kilion ba'ara misavto, in the impure land of the land of Moab. Ve'ishtores itisa, and the woman, that's Naomi, remained mitichla, she remained barren, betrayed Benoah from her two sons, the Armalom Ibalan, she remained a widow from her husband. So the Targum is pretty consistent that they were not Jewish, they violated the mitzvah of Hashem, they taka intermarried. It's hard to understand, I guess because they moved to Eretz Moav, there was nobody else to marry, so they ended up intermarrying and marrying Goyish women. It's very hard to understand. And they taka were punished because of that. And that's why they died. That was the crime they were guilty of. That's why the two sons, Machlon and Kilion, passed away in the Eretz Moav, in the stay Moav, Ba'ara Misavta, in the impure land of Moav. And Naomi was left bereft and barren. Rashi asks Akasha that anybody learning Yevamos would actually appreciate. Rashi says, What did Naomi mean when she says to them? Obviously, it was a metaphor. Obviously, it was out of desperation. But Naomi says to Rus and Arpa, there's nothing for you to wait around for. Even if I would get married tonight and have two more sons, potential husbands, will you wait around for them? Will you marry them? Of course not. So I no longer have any use for you. So Rashi asks the obvious question that even if she would have two sons, and even if Rus and Arpa would be willing to wait around till these boys would grow up, wait a good 13, 14, 15 years, wouldn't it be Ashes Ach Shlehaya Ba'ilamai, Mamish the Kasha of the Gemara, that even if assuming that because Machlon and Kilion passed away childless, even if you assume that they were married and then there would be a potential Yibum obligation, that's only to a surviving brother who is extant, who is living at the time that his two brothers were living. But you can't have a brother born subsequently. That's an Eishes Ach Shlehaya Ba'ilamai. it would be an Isser Eishes Ach. These women would be forbidden to those newborn sons anyway, because these women were married to those new baby boys' brothers. There's a prohibition, the one of the Arias. We had it in last week's Parashas Kedoshim, Parashas Achrimois, the previous parasha, Eishes Ach. There's a prohibition. You're not allowed to marry your sister-in-law. A special exception is made for the mitzvah of Yibum. Even though Machlon and Kilion passed away childless, but these future sons, these future boys, were not alive at the time that Arpah and Rus were married to their brothers. It would resort back to the prohibition of Eishes Ach. So this is known as an Eishes Ach Shlehoya Ba'ilama. You're not Zekukal Liyavam. There's no obligation of Yibam, and therefore it would be Eishes Ach. It would be back to the classic prohibition of Eishes Ach. It's an Eishes Ach Shlehoya Ba'ilama. So Rashi answers the Kasha that the reason why Naomi was able to allow them to marry her future sons, if they would be willing to wait around, is because they weren't Jewish. They were never married to Machlon and Kilion in the first place, because they weren't even Jewish. They were Nachrios. They had not yet converted, says Rashi. They're only coming to convert now. So if they never were married to the brother in the first place, if they would convert now, they would be permitted to marry these future sons. Norvas, Noami says that there's no point because it's not going to happen. But Lu Yitzur, if it would be possible to happen, theoretically they would be permitted to marry these new husbands, because they were never really married to Machlon and Kilion in the first place, because they weren't even Jewish, they were Nachrios. So Rashi's pretty clear that they were not Jewish. Rashi's following the lead of the Targum and the simple translation of the Pesukim. They weren't even Jewish. And Rashi says, because that's what the Pasuk says, Ki itach noshuv li'amech, we want to return with you. Me'at ni'al li'amechad, now we want to become Jewish now. So it is pretty clear from the Pesukim that they never converted yet. It's very hard to understand. That's one side of the story. The other side of the story is that we seem to have an impression from other sources, Gemaras and Midrashim, that they were Jewish. So let's look at the other side of the case. So in item Zion, the Gemara says in Baba Basra, Tzadik Aleph Amud Aleph, Hoya Rav Shimon Bar Yochai Oimer. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai used to say. So it's almost like Oimer. So we're going to celebrate the yard site of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. We can learn something from Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai used to say, Elimelech Machlon veKilion. So Elimelech and his two sons, Machlon and Kilion. This is the Gemara in Baba Basra. Gedoyli Hador Hayu. They were the greatest in the generation. Gedoyli Hador. Uparnosei Hador, and they were the leaders of the generation. They were the Gedoyli Hador. They were the Parnosei Hador. They were the providers. They carried this tremendous responsibility of caring for the nation while they were in Eretz Yisrael. Umipnei man nenshu. So why were they punished? Mipnei sheyatzu me'eretz luchatz la'aretz. So the Gemara tells us in the name of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, the whole reason they were punished, the reason why they passed away, was simply because they left Eretz Yisrael. It doesn't just mean because you leave Eretz Israel. It means that they abdicated from their role. They shirked their responsibility, like we said before. Like it says in the Pesukim, Vatoham kol ha'ir aleihen, that when Noami came back with her daughter-in-law, Rus, the whole nation was astounded. Vatoimarna hazois Noami, is this the Noami that we remember? My hazois Noami, what did the Pesuk mean? What are the people saying when they say, is this the Noami that we recall, that we remember from before? Amr Rabbi Yitzchak, Amru Chazis and Noami. They were pointing to Noami and they said, take a look at Noami. She yotzes me Eretz l'chutz l'aretz, like she left Eretz Yisrael. Ma olsala, look what happened to her. Look what became of her. So Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, he says, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai declares that the reason Elimelech and Machlon and Kilion passed away was because they left Eretz Yisrael. And he even reads that into the Pesukim. That's what the mobs, that's what the crowds were saying. When Noami came back bereft, they were pointing to her and they were mocking her. Look what becomes of someone who leaves Eretz Yisrael. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai reads that into the Pesukim. So you see from here that according to Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, that the only reason why Elimelech, Machlon, and Kilion passed away was not because they married non-Jewish women. which is what the Targum claims, the reason they passed away was simply the dictuk kal. So I called it a minor infraction. So it was probably a very severe infraction, leaving Eretz Yisrael at such a time and shirking your responsibility and abandoning Klal Yisrael. But relatively speaking, to assimilating and marrying and assimilating into a Goyish nation, so it's a relatively dictuk kal of leaving Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz. So I understand that Elimelech was punished for leaving Eretz Yisrael, because why else was he punished? He was married to Noemi. But Machlin and Kilian, they married Moabite women. So that's the whole reason why they passed away. So it would seem from the Gemara in Baba Basra that according to Rav Shimon bar Yochai, at least, they converted before. They were already Jewish. So the only thing we can find that they did wrong was the fact that they moved away. They abandoned Klal Yisrael and they left Eretz Yisrael and moved to the Sde Moab. The fact that they married Arpah and Rus is not held against them. It would seem that according to Rav Shimon bar Yochai, that Rus and Arpah had already converted. And the Rashbam in Baba Basra says that as well. The Rashbam in Baba Basra says on that Gemara, Ksiv Machlon v'Kilyon. So the Gemara, it's a different Gemara there, but it's the same sugya. On the one hand, in the Megillas Rus, they're referred to as Machlon and Kilyon. Those are the names of Noemi's sons. But it also says in Divrei Yamim, Yoyash v'Sarif, other names ascribed to Machlon and Kilyon. Last week we talked about names. So we have Machlon and Kilyon on the one hand, and on the other hand, they're referred to as Yoash and Sarif. We learned last week when we spoke about names, that back in those days, the names were given because they had divine inspiration, Ruach HaKodesh, the names were given sort of, I'll shame the Me'ira, because of the circumstances. And the names were almost like somewhat fluid because they had Ruach HaKodesh, that the names really represented the essence of the person, what the person was going through, what the person represented. That was in his name. So we have a contradiction. In Rus, we refer to them as Machlon and Kilyon. And over here in Divrei Hayamim, we refer to them as Yoyash and Sarif. So says the Gemara, Chad Omar, Yoyash v'Sarif Shma. So one person in the Gemara says that their real names were Yoyash and Sarif. Lama Nikra Shma and Machlon and Kilyon. So then why in Megillas Rus are they referred to as Machlon and Kilyon? She'asu gufan chulin v'Kilyon. Because they profaned themselves. Machloin, the root of the word machloin is chulin. They profane themselves. Kilyoin is kilyoin, destruction. They destroyed themselves. Shenischaibu kliya lamakam. They were guilty and they deserved to be destroyed. That's why they died. So the Gemara is clearly saying that they were destined to be punished because their very name, Machlin and Kilyon, that's what they were referred to, because they brought it upon themselves. They brought this tragedy upon themselves. They profaned themselves and they destroyed themselves. That's why they were referred to as Machlin and Kilyon. Their real names were Yoyash and Sarif. Also, not the most famous names, but Machlin and Kilyon also connotes that they were guilty, they profaned themselves, and they destroyed themselves. Says the Rashbam, what did they do that was so bad? How did they profane themselves and how did they destroy themselves? So the Rashbam simply says, like Rav Shimon bar Yochai says in the same sugya there, Al sheyatzu mi Eretz Yisrael. All the Gemara is referring to is the crime of having left Eretz Yisrael. So when the Gemara says they profane themselves, they made themselves chulin, chutz la'aretz, Eretz Temeyahi. How did they profane themselves? By moving to chutz la'aretz. Outside of Eretz Yisrael, it's like it's tamei. So you see from here, from the Shitas Rashbam, that the only thing they did wrong, the only thing that we hold against them, is the fact that they taka left Eretz Yisrael and moved to Chutz La'aretz. And v'diktiku HaKadosh Baruch Hu imoyim k'chut ha'sayra, leaving Eretz Yisrael is not so bad, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu holds tzaddikim, a hair's breadth, to the highest order, and therefore they deserve to be passed away. And that's all it means, that they profane themselves and they destroy themselves by leaving Eretz Yisrael, by abandoning Klal Yisrael. So I think the Rashbam also, consistent with Rav Shimon bar Yochai, that Rus and Arpah must have already had been Jewish. That was the only thing they were guilty of. You see from here again that Rus and Arpa must have already converted, and the Geirus was already Chal. The Geirus was effective before Machlon and Kilion married them in the Stei Moyav, and the only crime they committed was the fact they left Eretz Yisrael. I wrote in a footnote in number one here on the bottom. So the footnote, I cited the Marsha. The Marsha in Baba Basra, it's interesting, he actually argues on the Rashbam, and the Marsha says that what they were guilty was that they married non-Jewish women. They married non-Jewish women, and the Marsha himself cites the Targum that we learned together just a moment ago, that they were guilty of marrying non-Jewish women. So there's actually a machlokes here. What was the to-do? What were they achroy? What were they responsible for? What were they being punished for? The Marsha and the Targum and the Rashi and the simple translation of the Psukim, they married non-Jewish women. But
did you say that one thing led to the other by leaving Eretz Yisrael? I mean, the Rashbam would hope.
That's interesting. So you want to say that Rav Shimon Bar Yochai and the Rashbam don't necessarily argue on the Marsha and on the Targum. They're talking about what their first crime was. That's a very interesting trend. That's very interesting. But the Marsha, right? The Marsha doesn't seem. The Marsha seems to be saying that they weren't guilty for leaving Eretz Yisrael. They were guilty for marrying Nashon HaChrayis. It would seem that he's coming to argue, and that the Rashbam would say that maybe they were Jewish. We're going to soon see in a second that we have clear sources that they were Jewish. But that's an interesting point, Ezra. That could very well be. It could be that everybody agrees that they were not Jewish. That's possible. But in the meantime, we have here a fundamental machlokes, what Machlon and Kilion did wrong, and simply put, would be that we have a machlokes. The Targum and Rashi clearly say that they were punished for marrying Nashon Nachrios, and the Psukim sound like that. It's compelling, because why would Naomi try to convince them to stay behind if they were Jewish? And Rashi has a very strong raya, because Rashi says, how would they be allowed to marry anyway the future brothers, their future brothers-in-law, if it would be an Ashes Ach Shlehoya Ba'ilamai? That would imply that they were not Jewish. But on the other hand, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, the only thing that he finds against them is the fact that they left Eretz Yisrael, and the Rashbam says that as well. And the Marsha indeed argues on the Rashbam. Now here's a Medrash that's clear, Ezra, that they were Jewish. The Medrash says in the Zohar Chadash, and we can point out that the Zohar was written by Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. So it's very possible that what Rav Shimon Bar Yochai says in Baba Basra is Lishitasai, is consistent with what he wrote in the Zohar, that they did convert. Look what it says here in the Zohar. So I quoted the Zohar here. I saw this quoted. Shoal Rabbi Pidas. Rabbi Pidas asked the son of Rabbi Yoshi, Yoisi Ish Soichar. He asked him about this. Rus. He asked him about Rus. Kiving Shenis Gaira. So if she converted, Mitnei Maloi Karua B'Shem Achir, why didn't she change her name? Usually when a non-Jewish person converts, they take a Jewish name. So if we read the Psukim Kipshutai, that they were not Jewish, and they're converting right here and now on the street corner, speaking to Noami, so why don't we find that Rus changed her name? She was known as Rus before, and she's known as Rus now. How can you say she converted now? Didn't she convert? So apparently, Rabbi Pidas was asking Rabbi Yossi Ish Soichai, assuming the assumption of the question was, like Rashi and like the Targum, that she's first converting now. So why didn't she change her name? So look what Rabbi Yossi answers. Omrale, kach shamati, I heard the shem achar hayala. She did have a different name. She did convert and she did change her name. Ukisha nisas lamachloin. Only when she married Machloin, Karushma Rus, that's when she took on the Jewish name Rus. So you're asking me that if she converted, she should have changed her name. I'm answering you that she converted much earlier on in the story, before she married Machloin, the way you would have expected, and she did change her name. Umisham also b'shem zeh, and then she left the Stei Moyav and went to Eretz Yisrael. From forever on, she was known by the name of Rus. She did change her name. The Hakish Nisas Lamachlin is Gaira. She converted before she married Machlin. This is the Zoya. The Loila Achazman, she didn't convert later. So Amar lo. So Rav Pidas asks, V'haksiv achakach v'asher tolini olin v'lekecha elokai. Doesn't it say that Noami was pushing back? Noami was asking her questions and putting her through the process, and Ruth kept on saying, I want to be Jewish. Is she converted already? What's the shiloh? Harbi hasrois asasa Noami. Didn't Noami keep on warning Ruth? The Tanin and Kulan Kimolai. It says that Ruth accepted all of these things on her. The in the sky rukoidem. And if she already converted, Lama lahash the kule hai. What are they going through now? What's the big to do now? So the Zohar is mamish asking these questions, that if she converted now, why didn't she change her name? That's like the anecdotal evidence that she's not converting now. So Taka Rav Yossi says back that she converted before. So Rav Pidas persists, but doesn't it seem like in the Pesukim she's converting now? Mamish deshayim. So Omra loy. So Rav Yossi answers him, Chas v'sholem shenosa machlan v'higoya. What do you think? That Machlan married her when she wasn't Jewish? Chas v'sholem. Elkeshe nissen is gaira. She already converted. So what's going on now? So says Rav Yossi, u'becheskas emas boasa. So the print, the word I have there is boasa in the Zohar. I looked it up. U'becheskas emas boasa. So I think that means that until now, we could have attributed Rus and Arpa to fear. They might have converted only out of fear, because they were intimidated by Elimelech, by Machlan v'Kilyon. Maybe that's why they converted. Amdehiva arpa be'inyan zeh. Until now, they might have been intimidated. It was an uneven, unlevel playing field. Kivin shemesu balehen. But once their husbands died, arpa chazra l'surchana. Arpa taka went back. She went back to her sirchan. She went back to her old ways. However, Rus amda b'taima. Rus stayed by her commitment, her earlier commitment. So really they converted earlier. They were being tested now because their conversion was suspect. It was questionable because maybe it was only out of fear of their husbands, the fear of the situation. Kivin shemeis baila, once her husband passed away, b'rtzon nedavka b'toira, so she willingly attached herself to the Torah. She demonstrated her sincerity the whole time. So now Rav Pidas is convinced. Rav Yossi, of course they were Jewish from before. They just had to prove themselves. So Amar Loi, Shmat Mashma B'Tchila. So then what was her name before? If her name wasn't Rus the whole time, if Rus is her Jewish name, so what was her Moabite name? Amar Loi, so Rav Yossi says, Gilit Shma. So I don't know how to pronounce that. Gilius or Gilit. It sounds like Golias, actually, which was Arpa's son, her descendant. So her non-Jewish, her Goyish name was Gilis. And she changed her name to Rus. Kishenasa Machlan Karalishma Rus. When she converted and married Machlan, she changed her name. She took the name Rus for herself. We spoke last week that Rus means that she saturated Hashem with Shiras and Tishbachas because she merited to have a David HaMelech that composed Sefer Tehillim. You see from here the Shita of the Zohar HaChadosh that she already converted before. According to the Shita of the Zohar, and according to Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, who actually is the author of the Zohar, and the Rashbam, that the only thing we found wrong was that they left Eretz Yisrael, but that would lend itself to say that Machlan and Kiryan married Jewish women, Rus and Arpa converted. So the question comes back, which the Zohar really addresses. Why was Noami pushing them if they already were Jewish? And how could Noami be convincing them to return home? And how could Noami say that if I would have more sons, you would be able to marry these sons? Why wouldn't it be considered Eishes Ach Shlehoya Ba'ilam? So these are the questions. So already it's a fascinating story. We have the story itself. We have the different opinions whether they converted or not. So I found a Mahalach Nechman. I found a beautiful pshat in the Sefer Moya de Muzmanim from Rav Sternbach. He says like this. He makes it into a sugya. He says, Rus the Geoiris, right? The Tosis says in Nozir, on Chav Gimel Amid Beis, Tosis there has a calculation that she was Bas Benoishan Egloin, that she was a descendant of Egloin. So it says that Rus must have been a Ktana. When Rus converted, she must have been a minor. She must have been a katana, because Tosis there makes a cheshbon that it can't be that she waited. The pasuk praises Rus for having converted right away, so it must have been that she converted as a minor. So with Mavur, Tosis there says that she was a katana at the time of her geirus, was a katana. So there's a sugya in Ksubis. Yod Aleph Amad Aleph. Omer Avhuna Ger Katan Matbilan Oisay Al Das Bezdin. I actually learned this sugi with Ezra a while ago. Omar Avhuna Ger Katan Matbilan Oisay Al Das Bezdin. That a Ger Katan, there's a mechanism to convert a minor, even though a minor, even though a Ger, a Katan, can't perform any legally binding act. He can't make a kinyan, he can't sell something, he can't buy something. A Katan doesn't have Das. Nevertheless, Avhuna says that there's a mechanism to convert a ger katan. We can be matbo, we can be toivel. The bezdin could intervene, and the bezdin could be toivel a ger katan and convert a ger katan. And the Gemara says the reason is, the rationale is, that it's a schus. It's presumed to be a schus. If the person lived their lives as a non-Jew, and they already got used to the non-Jewish lifestyle, so we can't automatically say that it's a schus, that it's something they would want to do. But since, ideally, since objectively, anybody in his right mind would want to be a Jew and would want to serve Hashem, this is, we really have to speak to ourselves here. We really have to be able to see this for ourselves. Anybody in his right mind, if he wouldn't have the distractions of living a non-Jewish lifestyle, anybody in his right mind would want to be Jewish. We have over here a katan. We have a minor. He's not yet used to all the distractions of the world. He hasn't gotten entrenched in a non-Jewish lifestyle. So it's presumed to be a schus. It's presumed that anybody would want to be Jewish. Zachin la'adam shalei b'fanav. Even if the child is considered not a bar das, it's considered as if he's not sentient. It's as if he doesn't know what's going on. But we can accept the geiris on his behalf, because it's presumed to be a schus. And that's how it works. Schia, zachen la'adam shalei b'fanav. Even if we consider the katan to be absent, to be in abstentia, we can convert him in abstentia. Why? Because it's a schus. The bezdin can act as a shliach. The Rishonim discussed there exactly what the mechanism is. But that's what the Gemara says. Amar Rav Yosef says there's a catch. Because the geiris was only chal on the assumption that it was a schus, when the child grows up, the child can object. The child can protest, could annul the conversion. Yochel limchos. It's like we had in Yevamos that there's a kedusha ketana. The mother could marry the daughter off to a man, but she's not really authorized to do that. It's a rabbinic kedusha. When the girl grows up, she can dissolve the marriage. So we can have a presumed pending geiris. And when the child grows up, the child will decide for themselves. They have an opportunity to dissolve the geiris, or they can accept the geiris, and we presume them to be Jewish. When they're moicha, when the child grows up and is moicha, then it's megala lemafreya. It shows retroactively that it wasn't a schus in the first place. But in the meantime, it's presumed to be a schus. Tosfos in Sanhedrin, Samaches Amud Beis, explains the Gemara in Ksubis, when they grow up, and they're able to object, that's because the moment they reach majority, if they don't object, that seals the conversion in place, because that itself is considered like a Kabbalah's mitzvah. It's as if the geiris was pending, everything was done in place, they had a milah, they had a tefillah, and all they're missing is the final Kabbalah's geiris. By growing up and conducting yourself as a Jew, that itself formalizes the geiris, because we have the Kabbalah's mitzvahs and the geiris is chal. But if they object, then they're missing the Kabbalah's geiris, and it dissolves the geiris retroactively. So we see from here, if we assume that Rus was a ketana, like Tosfos says in Nazir, and how could they possibly have converted? The Zohar HaKadosh, Roshim Bar Yochai, says that they converted. It must have been with the mechanism of ger katan, of a dayan yesh lehem limchos, but they still, correct, they still have the ability to object, because it'll be bottled the geiris machmas the chazaran of Kabbalah's mitzvahs, and when they grew up and they weren't moicha, it could be considered a Kabbalah at that point. So the So someone just wrote in. You have the cheshbon that Tosfos says that she was a minor. We know the pasuk says that they lived together as husband and wife for approximately 10 years. So you would have to make the cheshbon that this story to line it up that now we're holding by their adulthood, and now is the final moment. Now is the moment of choice. So it says there that the geiris was chal v'katnusa, but they could be moicha. So the moyadim uzmanim explains that the geiris was chal, they really were geirim, and it was mitla tali, it was pending until they grew up. So that's why Noami was testing them. Do you really want to go along with this? Until now, it was a schus. You were happily married. You had what to live for. Now that Hashem struck against us and you don't have husbands, there's nothing for you to wait for. So perhaps you don't want to go through this. Maybe it's not considered a schus. That's why she was pushing them. That's why she was testing them. That maybe it's not such a schus for you anymore because it was mesu by Lehem. Arba taka reneged. She was mavatal the geiris. But Rus was his ametzing. She was mekabel the mitzvahs at that point. So the moedim uzmanim explains this is something interesting. It's food for thought. But the moedim uzmanim explains that based on that the whole geiris so far was they were ketanim, so they were geirim, they converted, but they were ketanim after all. So Machlan Kilyoin married ketanim. It was only a kedushin derabbanan. So if it's only a kedushin derabbanan, perhaps at that time, back in the times, even before the times of David and Shlomo HaMelech, we know that Shlomo HaMelech was the one who made the gzeira on Shnios. He's the one who made the Gemara Nivamis tells us. He's the one who made the gzeira on rabbinical forbidden relations. So perhaps before the times of David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech, back in the days of Rus and Elimelech, all the way thousands of years ago, maybe the Isser Derabbanan of Eish HaSach was not yet imposed, and perhaps they would have been able to marry their husband's brothers because they only were rabbinically married to Machlan and Kilyan. So maybe that's why Noami can say that you would be able to marry, you would be permitted to marry future husbands because the Isser Eishes Ach Shlahaya by Lamai perhaps didn't apply because they were ketanim at the time of the marriage and the whole kedushin was only the Rabbanim. I saw another chav, like a legal loophole, that even if you say that they would not be allowed to marry the Eishes Ach Shlahaya by Lamai, but perhaps they would have been able to annul the Geiris and then reconvert. I'm not sure if the if the Rabbanut in Israel would be happy with this, with these kunsin, but if they would recognize such a thing. But at the end of the day, there was a legal loophole here that they could get around the Isser Eishes Ach by annulling the Geiris and then accepting and then converting for real. So there would be a halachic way to marry Noami's future sons had they been willing to wait. So this could be a possible spin on they were Geirim, but it was still possible to annul the Geiris. There's another way to understand this, which is very similar to what we just said. The Rambam says an interesting thing. We have this in the Gemara as well, that when the Jewish people are at their climax, they did not accept Geirim in the times of David and Shlomo because maybe you're converting insincerely. Maybe you're only converting because you want to share in the wealth of the Jewish people when they're in the pinnacle of their success. So the Gemara there discusses, but what about different people that converted? What about in the Purim story when Mordechai and Esther were on the top of the world and we killed out all the Amalekim and we were the favored nation with the king? It says there that a lot of people converted. So it says there that they were Geirim Gruim, that they schlepped along, they put together an ad hoc bezin. Again, it probably wouldn't have been recognized. It was a bezin of laymen. It wasn't a certified bezin. It probably wouldn't have been recognized nowadays by the rabbanut. It's a whole tumult. But lemaisa, they were megayer against the favor of the rabbis in those days. And the Rambam says, let's see what happens. The Gemara tells us that we suspect the Geiris is insincere, but let's see what happens. That's what the Rambam says. So again, it's a very similar mahalach. Even if Rus was already an adult, but like the Zohar says, perhaps their Geiris was was suspect, and it was still pending, even if it would have been converted as an adult. It was perhaps suspect, perhaps they only converted out of fear. They were intimidated, they wanted to marry Machlon and Kilion, so perhaps their conversion was insincere. So again, Noemi was testing and challenging to see if their Geiris really was sincere, and Rus proved herself, and the rest is history. We should talk about Zoicha to learn the lessons of Rus, to learn the determination to be able to keep our word and to be Oivde Hashem. We should realize the schus that we have of being a Yid, Ashreinu Matoiv Chokeinu, it's a schus. Anybody in his right mind, Zachan La'adam Shloi B'fanav, anybody in his right mind would want to be Jewish and would want to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yishtaka B'zeicha to approach the days of Shuas, the Yimei Sfira, and ready ourselves to be Mekabel the Torah B'ratzim. Yashikah.